Hello, this is Chris Gatewood, founder of Threshold Counsel, and you are listening to IP Fridays.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of IP Fridays. Our names are Ken Suzanne and Rolf Clayson, and this is the podcast dedicated to intellectual property. It does not matter where you are from, in-house or private practice, novice or expert. We will help you stay up to date with current topics in the fields of trademarks, patents, design and copyright, discover useful tools, and much more.
Welcome to episode 34 of IP Fridays. Today's interview guest is Chris Gatewood, founder of Threshold Counsel, and he has a very diverse and broad and interesting business model, and he will tell us more about that. But before we jump into the interview, there are two little things that we want to get out first. First of all, I found that Facebook does not really offer any good place to discuss intellectual property matters, so I started the group Intellectual Property. This group is not really linked to IP Fridays, but for general discussion of intellectual property like patents, trademarks, copyright, and so forth. And we found that many of our listeners are on Facebook and might be interested to join the group and discuss there. So if you want to have a peek and join the group, you can go to www.ipfridays.com/Facebook group, one word. ipfridays.com/Facebook group, one word. I have imposed strict rules, so self-advertising is not allowed, and also posts like, hey, I wrote an article, check this out, are banned. So my hope is that I have created a place to discuss intellectual property matters in a spam-free environment. Have fun. Secondly, Germany has joined the global patent prosecution highway system. As some of you may know, the patent prosecution highway projects offer patent applicants the chance to ask for accelerated examination of their patent applications in countries that are participating in patent prosecution highway projects. And for example, if an examiner in one country decides that he or she wants to grant certain claims, and this is within the priority year or within the 31 or 30 months of the PCT system, then you can ask for accelerated examination at the other national or regional patent offices where you file your application after the priority date or after the 30 or 31 months of the PCT system. And these patent offices then typically agree to consider the granted claims in the first filing country as a basis for a patent to be granted in that particular country. So there have been a number of bilateral patent prosecution highway programs between two countries. So for example, Germany had bilateral PPH or patent prosecution highway programs with China, Japan, the UK, the US, Korea, and some other countries. But now they joined the so-called global patent prosecution highway program, where 19 countries are members, including Japan, the US, Korea, the UK, Canada, Australia, Denmark, Finland, Spain, Russia, and many other countries. So if you now file a patent application in one of these member countries and get granted claims within a year, or you file a PCT application within the priority year and then get granted claims in the first filing application within the 30 months, then you can enter the national phases either after the 12 months priority year or after the 30 months PCT and ask the national offices of the member countries of the Global Patent Prosecution Highway Program to consider your granted claims in an accelerated examination procedure. So, now I'm excited to hear more about Chris Gatewood. Ken, take it away.
Rolf, I'm joined today by Christopher Gatewood, who is the founder of Threshold Counsel,
where he works with clients in intellectual property matters, startup legal needs, venture capital transactions, and technology law. He also serves as outside fractional general counsel for businesses with or without an in-house legal department. His clients at Threshold include international consumer brands and solo founders of startups. Chris has a broad range of experience in commercial law, including copyright, trademarks, licensing, technology, and internet law, private equity and exempt securities, and social media issues. He is a board member of Lighthouse Labs, Richmond's startup accelerator, and a board member of the Virginia Commonwealth University School of Business Entrepreneurship Advisory Board. Chris has been honored as one of Richmond's top 40 under 40 by Style Weekly magazine, as a Virginia Super Lawyer Rising Star from 2008 to 2011, and Super Lawyer from 2012 to the present. He has also been listed as one of Virginia Business Magazine's Legal Elite for Intellectual Property Law. He is a 1995 graduate of Wake Forest University and a 2000 graduate of the University of Virginia School of Law. Chris is also the founder of NameWarden, LLC, creator of a web-based practice management product for trademark professionals. Welcome, Chris, to IP Fridays.
Thank you, Ken. I'm a fan. Happy to be with you.
Excellent, Chris. Chris, can you tell our listeners a bit about your practice?
Yeah, sure. I am one of two lawyers in Threshold Counsel, which I started about a little over 5 years ago now after working in some big firms in Washington, D.C., and also in Richmond. And our work is a mix of intellectual property, startups, and outside general counsel work. So we've got, as you mentioned in the intro, some clients that are global and quite huge, where we help manage our trademark portfolio or a catalog of copyright assets. And then we've got some folks who are banging out apps in their basement after hours, some small teams of co-founders who have bravely quit their day jobs to go and build something they thought was much more fun. And in all that, as you can imagine, there's an interesting mix of intellectual property work as well as some corporate stuff for the smaller clients to help them kind of get their ducks in a row, get street legal, and deal with each other as partners and co-founders. And also, when they're fortunate, to take on some outside investment to let them grow and build in that way. So once in a while, not a whole lot, but once in a while we do some litigation work, but not a whole lot of that anymore.
Sure. Now, how long, Chris, have you been doing that mix of things?
I spent about 10 years in some of the larger firms and started Threshold in 2010. So I guess it's been a little over 5 years. And since doing that, the mix of IP, some outside general counsel, and the startup work has been pretty steady. There's a partner that I had worked with at one of the previous firms who joined up about a year and a half ago. And he does a lot of that same stuff, arts and music and entertainment stuff than I've really been doing. So that's been interesting add-on as well.
Mm-hmm. Interesting name, Threshold Counsel. How did you come up with the name, and what does Threshold mean in the context of the name?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to, when I started that, I really didn't know Ken or have any preconceived goal about whether in 10 years it would be just me or it would be a whole bunch of folks practicing under that name. So I didn't want to just call it Gatewood PC or something because I didn't want to discourage anybody from joining up for those kinds of reasons or have to change the letterhead if somebody felt like joining. I wanted to kind of make it a little bit more expansive as a brand. The name Threshold, the idea came from the work that I had been enjoying the most in my first 10 years of practice, which was where I had a pretty close relationship with company management and founders and acted as their outside general counsel, really. So neither truly outside in the sense of a larger, more traditional law firm, but also not being their employee on their payroll like your regular general counsel would be. So Threshold was sort of my, maybe corny, but maybe it's not that's obvious not to be corny, sort of idea that if you're not truly inside or outside, you're right in the doorway.
Sure.
At the threshold of it. So that's why I call it that.
Hmm. Now, you mentioned startups a few times. What are the kinds of startups you work with, and what kinds of IP issues do you see regularly?
Yeah, we have a lot of it is technology. So enterprise software as a service companies, apps and game companies, publishers, things like that, content generators. A good bit of it is business to business. We certainly have some consumer facing companies as well, but a lot of it's business to business. A lot of it's around services and software as opposed to physical products. But we also have some physical products as well, which is kind of an interesting mix in beer and booze and sort of, you know, low cost. There's a public benefit corporation that's looking to bring low cost water purification to parts of the third world that have a difficult time with that in a very user friendly way that can be implemented on the ground, in places where they just don't have access to clean water. That's one of them that's more interesting in sort of community or, not nonprofit, because it's a PBC, but more community and worldwide growth oriented. There's another one that's doing some very innovative things around hardware for medical diagnostic labs. And that's been interesting because it's not a field I had worked in or knew much about before, but as far as their product goes, they've got some very interesting things going on and some good traction there.
Now,
so it's a good mix of things.
Yeah. Now, how do these startups find you? Is there any one particular way that you're finding that the startups are contacting you and finding you, or what's the secret to your success?
Yeah. I mean, we get most of it by referral or word of mouth or relationships around town. I say around town, probably a little over half of our clients are either Richmond or Central Virginia based. We have them other places too, as I'm sure you do, Ken. You know, clients kind of get scattered over time, but certainly the center of gravity is around Central Virginia. So with that, there's not a whole lot of lawyers here in town who do what we do and the way that we do it. And so that's helpful. And then once you sort of do these things and help a number of companies get started, protect their IP, raise some capital, and kind of do those, then these folks seem to know each other a lot, and they'll kind of have communities of interest around enterprise software builders or people who do games and apps or folks who do hardware for technologically driven companies and things like that. So a lot of it's like any practice, I suppose, word of mouth and referrals once in a while. And it's interesting because we get, I never would have thought this would be the case, Ken, but once in a while we'll get a call. Just somebody found our website, Googling around, like kind of the general idea of what they saw. And they'll just kind of call up out of the clear blue and start chatting. And so that's been interesting. So a couple of clients we've done a good bit of work with over the past few years have just kind of found us in that way, which I never would have expected. But, I guess it happens once in a while.
Sure. Now, are you seeing any common trends with the startups, with respect to IP? Any common trends in the sense of these are young companies and they all seem to be facing the same sort of issues, in the first few years of their life?
Yeah, I think sort of through my career, I've worked with a lot of very large companies and doing their trademark and copyright things in particular, but the startups are different. You kind of have to assume, without trying to insult the intelligence of some very, very smart people, that they don't know anything about IP protection or identification. So you kind of start at a different starting point so that you don't miss things. And you, one of the challenges that's common to all of these is that as they get going and ramp up, they need to build a brand. And finding a name and establishing a trademark that they're able to keep over time that's distinctive, but not just plain goofy, is very tough. And if you've worked with a lot of trademark clients, I'm sure you've seen this before. So we do kind of the regular thing of pre-clearing it, vetting it, seeing what else is out there that might be similar. And then you sort of roll your dice with an application or a product launch, or you regroup and think of something else. We've seen a number of clients, not recently and not necessarily our clients, but a number of businesses that have gotten really hung up on that demand letter from that lawyer for that other company because they started using a name that really didn't have enough daylight between it and somebody else in the same industry.
Mm-hmm.
That can really mess them up. And a large part of what we try to impress upon companies early on is, look, if you're going to invest in a brand, and you are, if you're going to build a name for yourself, and you are, make sure it's one you can keep and defend against others and keep others away from in time. So the trademarking piece is obviously important. They're also not as sophisticated. Some of them have been through, you know, our second and third careers. They know as much as any business owner about IP, but sometimes the copyright and licensing things are new to some of these particularly younger founders who are kind of coming out of college or coming out of grad school. They've got a great idea. Maybe they've already got a great product, but having not licensed it before or licensed any other input they may need to do what they need to do, mm-hmm. sometimes there's a steep learning curve for those folks as well. So I guess the difference between advising startups and advising a large corporation with its own legal department is you can't assume very much when you start advising them about what they know or whether they understand the impact of likelihood of confusion on the trademark, which seems sure. second nature to all of us, but it may not be front of mind or something that will be given any thought to.
Mm-hmm. How about social media, Chris? You know, it's such a prevalent thing in our lives every day. Have you seen any changes to your practice and your clients' needs in light of the widespread use of social media?
We have, yeah. I mean, and startups too, not only them certainly, but startups too, they really try to leverage those platforms as much as possible because they're on a shoestring. They have a low budget for marketing, and that's a good way to try to get some visibility for cheap early in the company's lifetime. So what we have to advise them on and really be careful about is making too many disclosures, the wrong kinds of disclosures in the securities. I'll set the securities context aside for the moment, but anybody who's practiced in that area, they've probably seen folks saying more than they should about trying to offer investment opportunities to blasting out on Twitter, which is a no-no, even in the 506C era of those kinds of more doable, workable public offerings of things, mm-hmm. Or general solicitation. But same security aside, the IP part that a lot of folks will trip over, particularly in light of patent law changes in the U.S. in the past couple of years, is they'll just say too much too soon about technology that should be patentable, or at least they should have a good shot at it. Whereas if you say too much too soon or disclose too many demo videos or give too many specifications because you're excited about your technology and want to shout it to the rooftops, you run a big risk of making it unpatentable, not because the invention's not original enough or doesn't meet the requirements, but because you said too much too soon in too much of an unguarded kind of way mm-hmm. and made disclosures about technology you hope to later patent. So you really got to watch that. And some folks are surprised how easy it is to shoot yourself in the foot on that.
Sure.
The other thing, you know, this is not just startups, but other things around social channels is how you can or cannot use content that's presented by these channels. So, and there was a recent case, who was the actress? Catherine Hagel or Heigl, I think she sued Walgreens for like $6 million because they put a picture of her on one of their social channels, the Walgreens corporate communications social channels of her shopping in a Walgreens or doing something with respect to Walgreens. And so the rights of publicity, these other kinds of rights that folks are very freewheeling a lot of times with photos, with videos, with references to other people, that it just happens so fast on the social channels that they often are not able to think through it fast enough mm-hmm. to not get themselves in trouble.
Sure,
can't help
sure.
a lot of the times.
Yeah, and it's so rapidly changing. I mean, and the idea of things going viral is something that's very important, you know, for practitioners to consider. When they're advising their clients on campaigns as well as dealing with situations after the fact as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's the challenge of having these always on, incredibly accessible, instantly published platforms. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever it is, Twitter, Instagram, Flickr, Snapchat, you name them. There's so many that it's really very difficult to keep on top of things, even for large companies that have departments that look at things like investor relations or look at things like public relations or those sorts of things.
Sure.
So you're going to want to, when advising startups in particular that may be newer, scrappier, more fast-paced, less reflective by nature because they're just moving a million miles a minute and using a skeleton crew to do it, to just sort of, if you can, woodshed them a little bit on social media best practices so they're a little less likely to stumble.
Now, Chris, I know you're involved with a company called NameWarden. I'm very interested in that. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what NameWarden is? Why did you choose the name? And why would this be of interest to trademark practitioners?
Yeah, I think, Ken, actually, that's where you and I may have first connected. It's about that, or, you know, on, I think maybe on social channels about NameWarden. Mm-hmm. So what it is I did the thing where you sort of start a project on the side because you can't buy what you want. That was true of me several years ago when I started Threshold Counsel and doing a lot of trademark work as we do. I really didn't want to buy an expensive license to what seemed to me at the time to be essentially a custom-made database in which I would have the privilege of either inputting or hiring somebody to input all of my serial numbers, all of my marks, all of my data, or at least a substantial part of it was going to have to be hand-entered, and I just didn't have any interest in that. So I got with the software developer guy that I know here and is a buddy of mine, and said, look, you know, would it be possible just to use the data that's in the USPTO database to build something to do this for me? And he said, yeah, it's going to take some cleanup. It's going to take some reorganization of that data. We probably should host it ourselves and all that stuff, but it can be done. And so from that, sort of the seed was planted, and a couple of years later, we had this service called NameWarden. And what it does is if you put in, Ken, your email address, or if you want everything for your firm, you can put in the email. It's just the domain, you know, the lawfirm.com without the so-and-so at, either by user or by firm, will give you, NameWarden will give you all of your deadlines forever after on in. And as you get an office action on one of the marks that you are responsible for, it'll tell you, it'll put the deadline on there. You have a notice of allowance, you know, your intent to use filings and those sorts of things. So it manages your docket for you and allows you to simply sit back and watch that come and scroll forward or backward as, you know, as far as you want to view those, set your own time horizon on them. And then within the links that you get on the site and in your weekly Monday horizon email updates showing you what's coming up, there's links for each deadline straight into TSDR to see what the last thing happened, read the office action, what the case may be. And when you file new applications, if you use your same email address or whatever it is that NameWarden is watching for you, the email, that's the corresponding email as your filing attorney, it'll add that new application to your docket as well, so you'll be able to watch that. There's also a defensive component, which looks at USPTO filings to see if anything similar to marks that you're monitoring and that you've told the system that you care about in classes that you care about. It'll give you that. Interesting too is, you know, we've seen this with a lot of our startup clients. It was true of us as well. When you start to build one thing, you often see other things that are needs and you want to build them as well. So we didn't start out to do it, but we built a business development product, a data product as well for trademark lawyers to kind of find people who need them when they need them based on USPTO actions for unrepresented, that is to say, pro se filers of marks. So that's been an interesting offshoot that some folks are getting some use out of. I don't want to turn the interview into a plug, but
sure, sure.
Kind of break it out to answer your question. It's namewarden.net. If you wanted to check out more about it, Ken, or see what that's all about. But it's been a fun side project. It's going well. There's a number of lawyers around the country who are using it to good effect and enjoying it as an improvement over what they were doing before.
Interesting. Technology certainly is helping lawyers help their clients and help lawyers find others as well.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. The data is out there, and it can be put to work for you instead of you working for it. And that's basically why we decided to go ahead and make NameWarden and see if anybody cared and see if anybody wanted to use it other than me. And it turns out, yeah, you know, we haven't done, you know, all that much marketing around it, but certainly it's proven itself to be useful, and we're happy and proud of that.
Great. Chris, how can our listeners get in touch with you if they want to talk with you further?
Yeah, they can. It's Chris, C-H-R-I-S, at threshold.cc. On Twitter, I'm Gatewood5000, and one of those two things will get you to me, or just if you Google Chris Gatewood Threshold or Chris Gatewood Richmond, I'm sure you'll find me easily enough.
Excellent. Chris, thanks so much for being on IP Fridays.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ken.
That's it for this episode. If you liked what you heard, please show us your love by visiting ipfridays.com/love and tweet a link to this show. We would be so grateful if you would do that. It would help us out to get the word out. Also, please subscribe to our podcast at ipfridays.com or on iTunes or Stitcher.com. If you have a question or want to be featured in one of the upcoming episodes, please send us your feedback at ipfridays.com/feedback. Also, please leave us a review on iTunes. You can go to ipfridays.com/iTunes, and it will take you right to the correct page on iTunes. If you want to get mentioned on this podcast or even have comments within the next episode, please leave us your voicemail at ipfridays.com/voicemail. You have been listening to an episode of IP Fridays. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, their respective law firms. None of the content should be considered legal advice. The IP Fridays podcast should not be construed as legal advice or legal opinion on any specific facts or circumstances. The contents of this podcast are intended for general informational purposes only, and you are urged to consult your own lawyer on any specific legal questions. As always, consult a lawyer or patent or trademark attorney. Copyright 2014, all rights reserved.